and queer efforts. And so we have to wonder, do we know where this money is going? Do we have faith that this money is going to be used in an accountable way? And I think this story with Pride Toronto shakes our confidence a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's worth noting that all taxpayers should be concerned with this. I just want to clarify that in January of 2022, Pride Toronto did cancel its grant with Public Safety Canada. That was the $1 million grant that they were working on. We were ourselves a little bit shocked that they were hired to look at safety for Canadians nationwide. A local Pride festival running a national safety survey was always a bit of a confusing fit. But they did cancel that particular Pride, and that was around the time that news of this these allegations certainly dropped. It's worth noting that Canadian Heritage is, quote, happy with the outcome of Pride Toronto's response. They're satisfied with Pride Toronto's response to this that initial report, and of course, paying back a record 500,000, more than 500,000, to Canadian Heritage. It's a lot. It's a lot, and I think what must be particularly frustrating for yourself, Tom, is that one of the critiques that you raised has always been with the subterfuge, the complete lack of accountability and access. That's something that we've spoken about multiple times. And this new board of directors, the ones that have really been dealing with the fallout for this, have said a lot of things along the lines of, we see the end of the tunnel, the light is coming through, we are mending our ways. And yet you feel like there's still that subterfuge, still that burying the lead.
Yeah, so we have this massive historic repayment in our community, and yet nowhere in Pride Toronto's recent annual report will you find information about this that details what's going on here. Instead, what they did is they buried this in a footnote in their financial statements. And within that footnote, they don't even tell us that this is a repayment to Canadian Heritage. They just say to a federal agency. So again, I had to show up at the Pride AGM. Again, I had to ask all of these uncomfortable, directed questions. Again, it's me, a historian, doing access to information requests, bringing the story forward. And that is not a reliable method of accountability. I mean, I was happy to rise to the occasion and do what I needed to do, but this is not. This does not make a system of accountability. Historians doing access to requests. There's not enough of us. And I stumbled on this by accident. It's important to note that I was doing a cute little history project that was criticizing the 1969 criminal code reform. That's what I was doing. And I stumbled on these documents by mistake. So that does not provide accountability. We need to believe that when things go bad, our organizations will come forward. They will come forward fully. They will deal with it right away. And the fact that 2 years after we first broke this story, I first appeared on your show here 2 years ago, and we're still learning new things because I'm unearthing them. That tells us all we need to know about that failure of leadership at current Pride Toronto.
I mean, we have a obviously we're broadcasting nationwide, but we broadcast first and foremost out of CIUT across the whole of the GTA, and so we definitely have listeners listening right now in Toronto. So for queer folks in the city, the Big Smoke, why is this important? Why is Pride Toronto's board and executive director trying to put this behind them? Burying that detail, as you mentioned, in a footnote. Why is that important? Like, as a queer person in Toronto, why should I care? We understand from a taxpayer perspective why everybody should care about this, but from a local perspective, why is that piece important?
Yeah, I mean, I think Pride Toronto is a really important historic institution in our community. This is an organization that was formed, at least officially, in 1981 in response to police raids on bathhouses in the city. And this has been a really important vehicle for our community to come together and not just to celebrate, but to also strategize, to build connections in order to really change our society. And if you look at the last 40 years, our communities have done so much together because of these various community organizations we've created. They matter. They change people's lives. And so we need to really be invested in these organizations. We can't allow them to be taken over by, a corporate board mentality, to be taken over by federal government and provincial government and city government interests. We have to keep it our own because our community needs it, especially now. What we're seeing happening not only in Canada, but across North America, this rise of a religious right that is going after us. And we need our organizations all hands on deck here. So I think that's why it really matters. We can't be lost in these financial scandals. If they happen, and they will happen, they need to be dealt with in a way that's transparent, accountable, that lets us move on quickly so that we can get to the actual battles that matter in our communities.
Well, we have contacted Pride Toronto, as I mentioned, and we're still waiting on a response from them. We also contacted Fierté Canada Pride, the national pride organization, to get a sense of what training and educational resources are made available to pride organizations nationwide to avoid a repeat of this. We haven't heard back from them either. However, it's worth noting that Fierté Canada Pride's national conference, where I would imagine this Toronto Pride debacle is a hot water cooler topic, is also happening this week. So we will forgive them for not responding in the middle of their conference. But I am certain that conversations happening here and now will be echoed with Pride organizations nationwide. Tom, I want to really thank you for holding the feet to the fire, being a mechanism for accountability. We could do with 100 more of you. That is certainly true. Is there anything that you want to leave with our listeners to consider as they think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really unfortunate what I discovered. This is not the kind of work that I wanted to be engaged in. I think you might look at $500,000 as being a bit of a victory. The fact that I found this, I uncovered it, and I caused some form of accountability. A lot of people are seeing this repayment that Pride is giving to Heritage as at least, oh my gosh, at least there was some accountability on this. But I'm not really in the mood to celebrate. Like I appreciate that the work that I've done resonated with a lot of people because there had been stories for many years of people feeling frustrated with Pride Toronto, and I brought the receipts. I could show everyone, yes, shenanigans have been taking place. So I am proud about that part of it. But ultimately, I'm not going to give up until I know that these bigger questions are finally answered. So I'm not really resting. I also think, what my story shows is, first of all, the importance of historians and the work that we do and the skills that we bring to the table. But also the fact that when you're working alone, as so many of us in our communities do, and you find an opportunity to make a difference, you should take it. You should speak the truth. And it's not always easy. I've been called a lot of names. But ultimately, it's been rewarding to know that I'm bringing some truth to the surface here. And I hope we can continue that work. So, yeah, thank you both for having me on and for really following this story because the media, that's a whole other issue we could talk about with this story and how they've dropped the ball, including queer media. But you guys have really got to the bottom of these issues. You've really investigated it and from all sides. I'm glad you're asking for responses from these other orgs, and I really hope you get it. So thank you guys, and I'll be happy to come back and chat with you about anything anytime.
Well, hopefully, no offense, but hopefully we don't talk about Toronto Pride next time. Hopefully we can
We
have you
do under
come
better
in.
circumstances.
Absolutely. All
Yeah.
right. Thank you so much, Tom, and we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Cancria, home of Canada's queer media. That was Don River with Everything's Good Right Now. I'm Luke Smith.
I am Sebastian.
And we did reach out to Fierté Canada Pride, and they did respond. In fact, they are currently, at time of recording, in PEI, where they have effectively gathered for their national conference. Toronto Pride has pointedly ignored multiple requests for comment. We followed up with them on multiple occasions to their communications office, and they have chosen to, frankly, ignore us. So that tells you a certain amount of information. But Fierté Canada Pride did acknowledge that they are unable to issue a statement on some of our more awkward questions regarding Toronto Pride's fraud and what they're training. We reviewed their programming schedule. They were not having any sessions planned around particularly good governance or not committing fraud. So that was unfortunate, but they are busy with the conference and weren't able to dive into more detail. But we'll keep an eye on that. But I was a bit disappointed to see that Toronto Pride had effectively ignored us. So,
well, I mean, that is the ultimate defense against media, is to just pretend like you're not there.
Exactly. Mm. Do you recall July 2022, a man with a gun at London, Ontario Pride?
I do not.
There was a man with a gun in Toronto Pride, Richard Silliers, who was 38. Sorry, it wasn't Pride. It was a drag queen story time over in Wortley Village in South London.
Okay. Wortley Village is striking a bell. Yeah, I do. I do vaguely remember this happening. Yeah.
Exactly. So he showed up and he had a weapon on him. There was video evidence. It all got quite heated quite quickly. Yeah, so he'd apparently he had sorry, it wasn't a gun. I have misread that entirely. I'm on a little bit of a lack of sleep at the moment, but he had a I think it was a large stick with a Canadian flag on it, which was seen as a weapon. Anyway, he was charged, he was arrested, he was charged, and he has just been found guilty for using a weapon at the Wortley Pride drag story time. So a court in Ontario has found him guilty of that crime. He will be facing sentencing in a couple of weeks. We're probably not going to follow the story a huge amount further. What he gets sentenced with is not as important as the fact that he was charged and convicted of those charges, or at least one of the charges for having a weapon and really, brandishing it at a drag story time. Consequences 2 years later. Hopefully that will inspire some better behavior at drag story times across the country. Now, you've been keeping a bit of an eye over on Greece. Quite a few different Greek stories happening. What is happening in the Mediterranean?
Well, if you recall, a couple of weeks ago when we first reported that Greek actually Greece actually did pass same-sex partnerships at the federal level, we were both a little bit surprised by that because in the same week we were also talking about stories about Russia. We compared the two, saying that the Orthodox Church in both countries actually has a lot of influence over government. And we may have rubbed the crystal ball a little bit because it turns out that the Orthodox Church in Greece is actually sort of flexing the muscles that they do have. As it happens, the 176 parliamentary members who voted in favor of same-sex partnerships have basically been excommunicated from the Greek Orthodox Church. And this was sort of announced the other day in from the they don't have a synod. What do they have? Well, the on Corfu Island, which is where the Orthodox Church is organized, there's messaging coming out from there. And it's kind of shocking that they would go this far. But when I thought about it, I was also kind of shocked that we haven't seen action like this in other countries. It's one of those things where, as much as I strongly disapprove of it is the obvious move. But yeah, there's no particular follow-up to it just yet, but there is this sort of church versus state story that's starting up in Greece. And right on the heels of this, on Saturday night, there was an attack in the city of, what was it, Aristotelis, which is one of the major, I mean, there's islands all over the place in Greece. It's one of the things it's known for. So we're saying it's this island relative to this other place, unless you have the map memorized. I don't know. It's a major city. Anyway, there are two 21-year-old non-binary individuals who were attacked by a crowd who ended up hiding in a restaurant, basically, to get away from them. And when they finally did managed to get out the restaurant, turns out the crowd had mostly just sort of hidden down alleyways, and they came out and started throwing bottles at them. They did get struck a few times, but they weren't hurt seriously. The police eventually were called in, and of the crowd, I think there are 21 arrests, and the government is sort of looking into what they can do about this because, I mean, what law can you pass to prevent a crowd from forming? It's already illegal. So they're looking at what they can do to sort of help prevent this kind of thing. And again, this is a story under development, but the main thing was that they were just shocked that this kind of thing would happen in one of the major cities, no less. So it's sort of two smaller stories, sort of falling out from the same-sex partnership. In a lot of other countries, what has happened was same-sex partnerships are legalized and acknowledged, and then the country just sort of goes, oh, I guess the government is supportive now. Crime will spike a little bit and then it'll go down eventually because, at least this is what the pattern generally holds, because they sort of realize that, the police are going to start enforcing against homophobic and transphobic attacks and gender nonconforming attacks and that kind of thing a lot more. So maybe this is just that one initial spike, but we're yet to see how this is going to play out.
I mean, definitely something to keep an eye on as it go. I do want to clarify. I believe that it was actually only a certain area's ultra-Orthodox church that is looking to expel two of the MPs that are within their specific area. Or have I misread it and it's all of them? Because I was pretty sure it was just
Well,
a
I think
few of them.
it's none of them are welcome, but it only applies to two of them.
Yeah. Being excommunicated is pretty serious. Just to
Because the Greek
cleanse.
Orthodox Church is not the only church in the Greek Isles. There's multiple sects of Christianity there, but they basically said none of you are welcome, and it applies to two of them. The 76 members who voted against, there's probably members among them who or members of the Greek Orthodox Church who are welcome back. And actually, I stand corrected. They do have a synod. I can never remember all the different sects. Some of them have, an archbishop, and some of them have a synod council, and it's hard to keep track. I can't remember them all. But anyway.
Just as a bit of a palate cleanser, France has been alluded to as becoming the first country to make an abortion, make the ability to have an abortion a constitutional right. It's worth mentioning they may not be exactly the first, as the former state of the Yugoslav in 1974 did have some similar language. But of course, the former state of the Yugoslav no longer exists, so their constitutional protections not as as significant. But France, in a vote of 780 to 72, made that pretty big
And this is explicitly named as well.
explicitly named. In now the French Constitution, it's been legal in France since 1972.
There's been a lot of tucking in, so like if you need an abortion because of preeclampsia, that would fall under critical health care, and then there's other countries that already have, critical health care is guaranteed, and then this is on the list and da da da. But if this is the first to explicitly name it at the federal level, that is different from just saying like, yeah, it's a law within a law within a law within a law within a law, whereas this is just like, no, this is at the federal level. It is a
Additionally, France is looking at compensating. There's a bill at the lower house of France which would recognize and compensate people convicted of homosexuality between 1942 and 1982. It's really worth stressing here that in France, homosexuality was perfectly legal since 1791. It was only until the puppet regime under the Nazi occupation, the Nazis, famously pro-gay advocates, I say, satirically,
Yes.
it was only when the Nazis rolled into town that the anti-gay law was brought in. However, when France was liberated, the law remained, and an estimated 10,000, mostly gay men, were then convicted between 42 and 82. A new bill, which follows similar bills that happen in Canada, the UK, Germany, they are now looking to recognize the impact of that and apologize. And finally, I wanted to mention that Ghana, it is, first of all, it's worth noting it's already illegal to have same-sex intercourse in Ghana, but they have introduced a sweeping bill that really is even more. It's like you're already illegal, but we're going to make it even more illegal, a prison sentence of up to 3 years for anyone who organizes a group of LGBT, sorry, 3 year prison sentence if you identify as LGBTQ, 5 years if you arrange yourselves into a group, and 10 years if you mention anyone under the age of 18 whilst as said group. Essentially, it now it undermines that fundamental freedom of association, the fundamental freedom of expression. And would put you in jail just for acknowledging your own sexuality. Now, in a surprise move, one of the critics of this bill is Ghana's finance ministry. The Ministry of Finance in Ghana has acknowledged that following quite similar laws being rolled out in Uganda, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank essentially curtailed and rolled back any new funding. And the Ghanaian Finance Ministry estimates that about $3.8 billion worth of World Bank funding over the next 5 years could be pulled If the president of Ghana signs this into law, he has not yet, at time of recording, signed it into law. The UN has called it a truly deplorable one. The UN aid organization said it'll have a massive impact. The US aid organization said that this law will impact the potential future of funding for their initiatives in Ghana.
There's also a massive cost to enforcement. It's not listed in these articles, but a lot of institutions have pointed that out. So in the States in the 80s, it was illegal to be gay in the American military, and they found that it was actually a huge burden on the military police, which is why they switched to don't ask, don't tell. We're not going to investigate you because that's expensive. But if we find out by some other means, if somebody just tells us, then that's cheap and enforceable. So the cost to enforcement, actually a lot of the laws in Canada were softened up because the cost of enforcement. So that is also on the table. The cost of bringing this is, I mean, that's surely the finance minister would have looked at that and said, like, ooh, that's a 5% bump to the defense
Well,
and policing.
$3.8 billion is not back of the couch pocket change for sure.
No.
This year alone, just this year, they could lose about $850 million with this particular decision. Like I said, the Ghanaian president has not yet, at time of recording, signed it into law. There's potentially a chance that he will not. He could take up to 2 weeks or so to make that decision. We will be monitoring it as it proceeds. There have been protests at the Ghanaian embassy in Canada and pressure on Canada to also look at its own aid support for Ghana following the approval of this law. Like I said, it has not yet been signed into law, so we'll have to just wait and see. But I believe we have run out of time. We are playing out with our last track of the day, which is This Moment by Cedar Roots. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian, and thank you for listening.
Muddied it up deep into the grave. Should I get up? Should I be medicated? 'Cause everything's good right now. And good things just don't change. Is everything good right now? The perfect shade of beige. A stone hard renegade. Said it enough. There's comfort in the grave. 'Cause everything's good right now. And good things just don't change. Do nothing for you to power.